So we're in our third week of a sermon series on grace, God's grace. If you recall, I defined in week one what grace is. It's simply this. It's a gift, never to be earned or paid back, but simply a free, unmerited gift from God. Grace. First week, we talked about prevenient grace, that grace that comes before. One way of looking at it is God's knowing that God's on to us before we're ever on to God. Okay? Prevenient grace. Then last week, Pastor Hazel shared with us the story or the identity of justifying grace, that moment when we say yes back to God. Right, where we acknowledge God's grace or God's working in our lives and we say yes, and we realize that Jesus paid the debt. That's that gift of grace, right? This week we're going to talk about sanctifying grace, the continuing gift of God. And sanctifying grace is just a fancy way of saying the transforming work of God in our lives that brings us from who we were to who God wants us to be. And so I had chosen Ephesians chapter 3, and I actually chose the whole chapter, but for today, I wanted to narrow it down just a little bit from chapter 3, verse 14 through 19. And this is a prayer that Paul prays for the church in Ephesus. And he writes this, "For this reason I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth takes its name. I pray that according to the riches of his glory, he may grant that you may be strengthened in your inner being with power through his Spirit, and that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, as you are being rooted and grounded in love. I pray that you may have the power to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, so that you may be fulfilled or may be filled with the fullness of God." This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Now, one thing that I want to point out about Paul is, if you know anything about Paul, he usually opens all of his letters, church letters, which we know as the epistles, in one way or another around being who he is. And he normally writes it this way, "I, Paul, a servant or slave to Christ." Now, what that means is he is taking on a lowly, humble position. He is surrendering everything to God through Christ. Now, what's so amazing that he about the statement that I am a servant of Christ or a slave to Christ is the fact that in Paul's former life, before he met Christ on the road to Damascus, he was braggadocious, if I had to put it in one word or another. He was a Jew of the Jews. He was the top of his class in Jewish seminary. He was a keeper of the law, and he was a persecutor of Christians, and he bragged about it. I mean, he just simply said, "I was the best at it." And to go from that place of being headstrong and braggadocious to a place of, "I'm a servant, I'm a slave, I'm humble. Let me just tell you, I didn't have it all together, but only through the work of Christ can I proclaim any good works." There's a transformation from head to heart there. And that transformation, not only is it justifying grace when he met Jesus on the road to Damascus, but it's a sanctifying grace a transforming grace that is working in his life as he's coming to know Christ more and more. He's allowing his old ways to be put aside, and he's embracing new ways. So we're going to talk about today sanctifying grace, that transforming grace that doesn't leave us stuck in the past. And I'll give you three examples. The first one will be biblical, and the second two will be like real world today, right? So here's a biblical example that came to mind as I was preparing for this story, or for this sermon, which is usually a story. So, you know. Anyway, how about Moses? If you look at the second chapter of Exodus, you see who Moses started out to be. He started out as an Egyptian, but at some point in chapter 2, he has this epiphany of who he really is and whose he really is, right? He's no longer an Egyptian, but he's a Hebrew. And as he comes to realize his identity as a Hebrew, he starts to see the world differently. And one day while he's out in the field, he sees an Egyptian beating one of his brothers, a Hebrew. Now, I don't mean blood brother, but I mean brother by family, right? And he gets enraged and he snaps and he actually kills the Egyptian. He doesn't know how to handle his emotions. He just, he snaps. And then he buries the Egyptian and he like hides. And the next day he goes out and now he sees two of his brothers, two Hebrews squabbling, fighting. And he tries to break it up. There's a sanctifying grace going on in here because this time he's just saying, hey, we're in this together. We shouldn't be fighting. And the one Hebrew turns to him and says, well, what are you going to do about it? You going to kill us too? And all of a sudden there's a deep conviction that comes over Moses and he flees. He's like, they're on to me. I can't keep my emotions in check. And so he flees. He flees Egypt and he starts out into this desert and he's walking and walking. And he's walking with God. So sanctifying grace is that transformation that happens when we walk with God. And how do we know that there was some sanctifying grace going on in Moses' life? Well, the very next time he interacts with people, he's at the well of Midian. And the women of a certain shepherd are there tending their flock. And these bandits come in and they're trying to take control of the well. And Moses steps up. And he actually fights them off, but he doesn't kill. He's now able to pull back and control his emotions in a way that prevents him from murdering again. But he speaks the truth in love, and he says, this is not your place. This is their place. And so we see the beginning of a transformation in Moses' life. And the story goes on that he goes and he becomes a shepherd, right? And God is at work in his life the whole time. And then God calls him to be the pastor of the largest church in history, to go and rescue his people, Israel, out of bondage. So what's so interesting about that is God didn't call Moses right away. God had to do some work in his life before he could send him to this appointment. And so he did. Moses responded like any good human would. Like, I can't do that. Like, I can't even speak. I don't even know you. Who should I say is sending me? And God's like, I got this. I'm going to use you. And Moses becomes the most patient, understanding, transformed pastor that the Israelites have ever seen. And he comes across surrendering his will and allowing God to transform his heart, mind, and soul to be able to be used by God. in some of the toughest conditions that we can imagine. Imagine being a church walking in the desert for 40 years. Imagine being the appointed pastor there. Imagine the griping and the gossip going on. It wasn't too long, they're out in the desert and they're already saying, we want to go back to Egypt, right? But it's God's sanctifying grace that is transforming Moses into the leadership or leader that is needed for that situation. Now that's the biblical side of sanctifying grace, that transforming grace. And I want to share like two stories here. I'm going to set this over here. Now, I don't think the 8 o'clock service was honest with me. The 9:15 service was really honest. So now's your chance to be honest. In high school, how many of you had an enemy? All right, we've got some honest people in the house. So when I say enemy, like, you know, somebody who you just didn't get along, you just butted heads with. Like, for me, I had one, which is surprising. I probably should have had more. But anyway, maybe they had me as their, I don't know. But I did have one in high school, and his name was Craig. And we butted heads on everything. It was really bad. We'd come up behind each other and knock each other's books out of our hands and chase each other down the hallway and, you know, say mean things. And this would escalate to the point where one night that we were at a party and we were going to have it out. I was just done. And Craig got in his car and took off, and I got in my car and I took off to follow him and chase him, because wherever we ended up, that's where we were going to have it out. And he was doing about 80 miles an hour on 511 heading north, and he came to Route 20, and I was hot on his trail. And all of a sudden, he slowed down to about 35 and turned left onto Route 20. And there was a semi coming. And the thing that still sticks out in my mind is the way the semi locked up its brakes. And I can still hear the chirp, 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 chirping of the tires as he tried to avoid Craig. And it's only by the grace of God that Craig didn't get smushed, that he didn't get hit at all, and he kept on going. And in that moment, I was like, that's it. The chase is over. I don't want to be responsible for death. You know what I mean? And so from that point on, for the next 8 months, we avoided each other. We just avoided each other. We graduated, and we went on with life. So let me just be the first to tell you that God's got a sense of humor. 20 years would go by. I would get this call to ministry, and I'd have to go back to college to finish my degree. And so I went back to the only place that would accept me at the time, which was Mount Vernon Nazarene University. And they had a special cohort program. For 18 months, there'd be 12 to 14 of us in this program, meeting once a week for 18 months. First night of class, I look over. Who's sitting in the corner? Craig. And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. It can't be him. I didn't get a chance to interact with him, so I went home, and I'm thinking all week long, like, the things that we would do to each other and how we really hated each other. And so the next week comes, and in this school is a Christian university, so they start each class with prayer requests and devotions. And so I walk in, Craig walks in, I look at him, he looks at me, and I'm like, Craig? And he's like, Christopher? And we're like, oh my gosh. And before we could even say anything, the professor walks in and says, any prayer requests? So I shot my hand up. You know, that was the only one to raise my hand that night. Man, that was embarrassing. But he called on me and I said, yeah, I would just like forgiveness for immature acts of 20 years ago. Anybody else? No. And so he prayed. And so we, right after the prayer, we started right into the classwork, and halfway through the class, we broke for dinner. Of course, at dinner time, we're sitting there, Craig and I are catching up, and ironically, he had gone into the Air Force and was out in California, and I had gone into the Army and was in Texas, and 20 years later, we're in Columbus at the same class, at the same time. And I stopped him about halfway through his catching up. I said, you know, that prayer request was from me to you. And he said, yeah, I know, I forgive you. Likewise, would you forgive me? And I'm, of course. He says, we were pretty hard on each other back then. And I says, yeah, right? And so over the next several months, we began to build a friendship. And about 6 months into the program, I received a call from his wife. Craig had had a stroke. And I was like, oh my goodness. So I dropped what I was doing. I went down to OSU Hospital and walked in to his room, and he was unconscious. And I didn't know what to do other than to offer a prayer. So I prayed for him, and I prayed for his wife, and I left. And I thought, why, God? Why? Why now, when we're just making a friendship? And so his wife called me the next day, and she goes, your visit, I hope you're coming back down because your visit really meant a lot to Craig. And I said, well, wasn't Craig unconscious? She goes, that's what we thought until he woke up this morning and he was talking about your visit. And I'm like, really? I'll be down there. So on the way down there, I was listening to a sermon on the radio about Jesus washing the disciples' feet. And the whole point of Jesus coming was to teach us how to serve one another. And I thought, wow, that's powerful. So I walked into the room, and Craig was now sitting upright. And he looked at me, and he smiled. And we chatted for about 20 minutes. And then all of a sudden, his demeanor changed. He got real quiet, and his head kind of sunk, and I'm like, Craig, what's wrong? And he said, I'm embarrassed. I said, what are you embarrassed about? He said, well, I have to go to the restroom. Oh, no problem. He said, I can either step out of the room, or I can help you across the room. He goes, can you help me across the room? I'd like that. And I was like, sure. So imagine 2 6-foot-1 men, built rather slender, you know, at 180. All right. He was probably closer to 180. I was closer to 230-ish. And we were doing what I call the two-stroke tango across the room. We were chest to chest. And I was embracing him fully because he had no control over his left side, and we're walking backwards. And I'm carrying the weight of Craig. We get to the restroom, and his wife takes his shorts down, and we sit him down, and I'm leaning against the wall trying to catch my breath. And I look down, and Craig's got these tears streaming down his face. And I said, Craig, what's wrong? Of course, the first thing I thought of is we didn't make it in time, right? I said, Craig, what's wrong? And he looks up at me, says, trying to hold it together. He says, I just can't believe you're here serving me this way. It's a funny story. I heard this sermon about Jesus washing the disciples' feet, wanting to teach us how to serve. If I can't serve you in this time of need, then I failed to learn what Jesus was teaching. You see, I think that whole story, for me personally, was a credit to God's sanctifying grace. To take an enemy and then transform it into a friendship and a way to serve. The beautiful part about that whole story is Craig made a full recovery, and we walked across the stage during graduation together, and we become really good friends. And I think only by the grace of God can he do that. Only by the grace of God. Let me close with this story, because I think this sanctifying grace can be applied to everybody's life, whether you're 3 or 93. So last church I served, I met this sparkling, delightful woman. Her name was Eileen. And she came in shortly after she transferred to our church into my office and said, "Pastor, how can I serve?" And I said, "Well, how do you want to serve?" And she was like, "Well, I was at my former church. I was a Stephen minister and a communion steward and this and that and the other thing." And I says, "Man, you're just like a marathon runner." And she got the giggles and she goes, "But I just have a heart to serve." I said, she goes, why do you say I'm a marathon runner?" I said, "Because I got to be honest with you. I've talked to some people that are your age that have thrown in the towel already. They'll say, 'I've done my service. It's time for somebody else to do it.'" And she goes, "Pastor, every time I open myself to God, I learn something new. And I'm not done learning yet." And she goes, "I'm 88 years old, and I can still drive and walk and talk. Therefore, I can still serve." And I said, "Amen." She became one of our care ministers who would offer pastoral care to people in the hospital or shut-ins or even in hospice. She would take communion to them. And she just had this sparkle in her eye. And I think, that's sanctifying grace. The willingness to surrender ourselves to God's will. No matter how old we are, no matter how unimportant we think we are, or how important we think we are, sanctifying grace is that grace of surrendering to God and allowing his will to be done in our lives for the sake of the kingdom.